he could only see his wife again. We were within 100,000 kilometers of the planet when the ship's Ancilla announced that our last escape orbit was being cut off. Many ships are moving down star through the quarantine shield. They are allowed full functionality, power, and speed, and are now matching our course and trajectory. I spun around as more than 100 flashed into sensor view, most smaller than ours, but a few substantially greater, and no doubt packing tremendous firepower.
Interdiction, the Didax said. The confirmer did indeed help set the trap.
He made one final attempt to shift our orbit up star, but confinement fields swept in to prevent us from achieving maximum speed, and of course, we could not enter slipspace. We were like an insect caught in a bottle, buzzing in futility. When the Didact had gathered as much information as he could, he said,
"Something has provoked the San Shum to rebellion."
"But they have no weapons."
"Had no weapons. The confirmer has not been attentive. Clearly, they are still slippery customers."
"Commander of the response fleet orders that we submit and stand down," the ship's Ancilla said. "I am ordered to hand over control. Shall I comply?"
"No choice,"
the Didact said. He looked around, as if still trying to find a way to run, a place to escape. I watched him with a doubled awareness, sharing in a strange, incomplete fashion his emotions and memories of previous defeats, flashes of dead comrades, entire worlds destroyed in apparent retaliation. More than I could stand. I backed away, bumping up against the humans.
"What will happen to us?" Shakas asked. "We're not even supposed to be here."
"They will punish," Riser said. I could not answer. I did not know. A second Ancilla appeared beside the ships. The two engaged in some sort of contest, not physical, but conducted throughout all the ship's systems. Their images merged, twisted geometrically about each other, then spiraled up and vanished. "What's that?" I asked.
"AI suppressors,"
the Didact said.
"Instant debriefing and transfer. Our ship has been stripped of knowledge and control."
We were feeling the full strength of a Forerunner warship's most modern weaponry, wrapped and stunned like a fly in a web. Close-in confinement fields flashed around the command center. We felt gravitation cease. At odd angles, the Didact, the humans, and I waited helplessly in semi-darkness, blind to all outside activity. Our own Ancillas fell silent under the AI suppressors, beamed from outside. Finally, came total darkness. Minutes passed. Riser was praying in an old human dialect not heard in 10,000 years. Its cadences sounded familiar to me. The Didact had once studied human languages. Shakas was silent. Slowly, my armor started to fail. My breath came hard and shallow. Something sparkled to my right. I tried to turn, but the armor had locked up and now held me immobile. An orange glare increased to unbearable brilliance, and I saw our bulkheads and control surfaces melt and collapse, while new walls of hard light fought to rise between us and the vacuum. Even under siege, stripped of nearly all higher functions, the Didact's ship was valiantly trying to protect us. Our world became a twisting, free-form struggle between destructor beams and new construction. I watched in numb fascination as the struggle ramped up to a pitch I could not track with my natural senses, and then slowly subsided. Our ship was losing. Half of what was left of the control center, abstract and angular and much smaller, fell away and vanished. I briefly saw the curved flank of a sleek Despair-class hunter killer, glinting and flashing as it reflected the dying glow of our hull's destruction. We drifted free. Our air rapidly staled, and we were surrounded by vacuum. Into my narrowing point of view came three powerful, fully operational seekers, longer, sleeker versions of the Didact's old war sphinxes. They lacked the scowling features of the older machines, depersonalized, dark, fast. One of them cut through the new-grown walls and circled behind us, then dropped aft, penetrating interior bulkheads, searching for other occupants. Through shredded layers of ship's decking, I watched it release the war sphinxes, only to smash them like toys, slice them into sections, and then reduce those to sparking dust. The sphinxes offered no resistance. Another took the didact in tow, bouncing in his armor like a child's toy on a string as he was hauled from the dying ship into the depths of space. The third lingered near me, but took no action, as if awaiting instructions. Then, just as my vision shrank to a purplish cone, and I thought I'd taken my last breath, the Seeker swept out its manipulators, seized my armor, and tugged me from the broken hull, not toward a flotilla of ships, but outward, around, and finally, down. We were all being unceremoniously dragged to the surface of the Sanshum world. Chapter 24. Paralyzed, wrapped in a transparent field like a bubble, unable to talk to anyone, my ancilla deactivated by suppressors, I had an ever-changing ringside view of what Forerunners do when their anger and fear takes charge. They have no warrior discipline. The atmosphere below was a swirling soup of smoke and fire. Warrior craft and automated weapon systems were mostly too small to be visible, but I saw their effects. Darting beams of needle light, glowing arcs cutting across continents, gigantic, stamp-like divots punched into the crust, and then lifted up, spun about, overturned. I had never seen anything like this, but the didact had. His memories offered commentary and context as the grappler dragged me down toward that hell. For some time, my involuntary point of view spun away from the planet. Looking outward, I saw weapons and ships in higher orbits transit like frantic stars, the blinding sun, and then the sparkling, dissolving hulk of the didact's ship. The ship that the librarian had seated inside the central peak of Jamonkin Crater. A bent, broken mass, still pitifully trying to reassemble. A ship that never even had a name. Several times, the grappler and I passed through pulses of ionized gas and superheated plasma that tingled my nerves and throbbed in my bones, without actual sound. It slowly became obvious that the decimation of the Sanshum world was not all one-sided. The planet itself was a source of plasma pulses and other firepower. More interesting, I caught sight of a craft silhouetted against the stars that looked like nothing made by Forerunners. A flat platform surrounded by billowing silvery sails, flapping in and out like the bell of a jellyfish, as if trying to swim clear but not succeeding. The bell dissolved. The platform broke up. Bodies spilled, tiny and motionless. And then all of it was gone. I spun around again. The planet seemed close enough to touch, maybe 100 kilometers below, nighttime emphasizing the dying glow of what might have been forests, cities. Near the brightening arc of sunrise, a glistening river was delineated against the shadow of dawn, studded with smoking pinpoints of orange. Burning ships. Ships made to float on water. There was plenty of time to feel sorry for myself, to regret all I had done. But contrary to all my self-expectations and past attitudes, I didn't. Sorry about nothing, regretting nothing, simply watching, waiting. Waiting with a kind of contentment to die, if that was necessary and inevitable. Wondering about our humans, who had every reason to regret having anything to do with me, and who, if they still lived, might now be adding to their own awareness of past battles, old wars. The main prize was, of course, the didact. He had fled some duty too onerous to contemplate. He had fought against a council decision, and, losing that fight, he had hidden away, entered into an honorable, if not permanent retirement. But now his opponents had him again. That seemed more than significant. It caused a deeper anger than anything being done to me. I shut my eyes for a moment. When I opened them again, flares of atmospheric entry shot up on all sides. We were very close to the surface, less than 60 kilometers, and rapidly descending. I spun again and saw space through a cone of ionized gases. Centered in that cone, something impossible appeared far beyond the panoply of ships and weapons exchanges. An enormous ripple that stirred the stars like a stick twirled through flecked paint. The disturbance swept across well over a third of my view, then was framed by an elliptical lacework of hard light. I recognized that this was one end of a massive portal, designed to transport a great deal of mass on a continuing basis. I watched, without emotion, as an enormous but delicate silver ring emerged through the purplish hole in the center of the lacework. Despite its size, the portal had opened far from the orbiting ships, well over a million kilometers outward from the orbit of the Sanshum's dying world. Far above war, death, the concerns of little creatures like myself. It's big, my lips tried to say, but again, my breath hitched, my lungs heaved. I tried to suck up whatever air was left, but clearly, I was running out. The Seeker was towing me all the way down to the surface, with only the bubble as protection. The ring far above shimmered. Within its delicacy, spokes of hard light shot toward the center and created a brilliant copper-hued hub fully a third as wide as the ring itself. Half of the ring fell into shadow. The other half glimmered in bright sun. The inner surface, it's covered with water. My tunnel vision narrowed around the ring, focused on it, and I noticed tiny details. Clouds, clouds in shadow, impossibly tiny against such vastness. Mountains, canyons, detail upon detail as my vision both sharpened and shrank inward until it winked out altogether and I drifted through a thick pudding of nothing. It was now that the domain opened to me. Without benefit of Ancilla, interface, or past experience, it was new, deep, appropriately shapeless. That made sense. I was dying, after all. Then, it assumed a form, rising around me like a beautiful building with gleaming, indefinite architecture, not quite seen, but definitely sensed, felt, a lightness that carried its own somber joy. Here comes everybody, I thought. And everybody who had ever visited the domain said to me, preserve. The lightness vanished instantly. The building was being carved apart just as our ship had died. More messages. This time is coming to an end. Preserve. The history of Forerunners will soon conclude. These came with a rising scream of anguish, as if I had plugged into a chamber where essences were pouring forth more than recall and knowledge, pouring forth frustration, horror, pain. Before the bump and the sudden inrush of cold, clean air, breathable air, but with a sharp tang of soot and ozone, the domain lifted up and away. I was grateful to be free of it. For a moment, I doubted I had seen anything but a reflection of my own emotions and predicament.
Sometimes there is a kind of broken mirror aspect.
Vaguely, I wondered about the giant ring. Had I imagined it? It had seemed so real. Then a word flashed into my revived mind, echoing from the image I had just seen, or imagined or conjured up from anoxia. That single word connected intimately with the precious little that the domain had revealed to me. Death. Destruction. Massive power. That word was Halo. Chapter 25. Zhangzhikom, the Greater Sanxiom Quarantine World. What in hell have they done to you, Manipular? The voice was mannered, cultured. I recognized its highly trained and inculcated tones, like powerful music rising and echoing through a great solemn structure. For a moment, I thought maybe this was the domain again, speaking in a more physical and personal way. Not so, however. The voice was coming through my ears. I could smell something other than burning, like the resonant, musky perfume favored by my father, far too expensive for my swap father or other miners, or warrior servants. The voice was definitely not my father's, however. My eyes were open, but showed only a darkness swimming with vague shadows. Turn off the suppressors. His armor can revive him, and I do want him revived. Same voice, but not directed at me. Another voice, less powerful, subservient. We don't know whether the armor has been counter-equipped. Turn them all off. We have the one we want. Let's get some additional details. I'm sure there's a mad scheme lurking here somewhere. My armor loosened. Strength returned to my flesh. I had some freedom of motion, but not much. The suppressor had been shut down, but physical shackles still held me. I seemed to hang from a chain or a hook in a grayish, echoing volume. I blinked to clear the blurriness.
There you are, the voice said. I ask you again, Manipular. What has the Didact done to you?
I managed to speak, barely. I'm a first form, not a Manipular.
You smell like a warrior servant, but you look more like a misshapen builder. How did that happen?
Brevet mutation. Necessary under the circumstances. The powerful voice turned thick with pity.
Do you know where you are? And what has happened?
I saw the planet being devastated. I saw a great ring lit by the sun on one side. Perhaps I imagined it.
You're on what is left of Zhangzhikom, the primary treaty planet of the Sanxiom. Our former enemies have turned enemy again. Not unforeseen. But can you tell me why the Prometheans allowed this to happen?
No. I tried to focus on a blurred, shifting wall of light to my left and couldn't. None of it was familiar. None of it made sense.
Why would the librarian's recent visit provoke this uprising?
I don't know that it did.
But you do know about her visit.
The confirmer mentioned it.
Ah, a shameful travesty, that one. Who guards the guards? Still, he has the wit to serve those who release him from onerous duties. You seem to remember a few important things.
I'm not trying to deceive you.
Of course not. It must feel good to be back among your kind.
I don't know that I am yet.
A violent return to the fold, that's for sure. But under the circumstances, we could not afford to have an unassigned ship interfere with our operations.
There were humans.
I haven't inquired. If so, that infraction will be punished as well.
As my eyes cleared and my senses returned, the large grayish outline before me took on shape and focus. I saw a builder. Perhaps the finest specimen of my rate I had ever observed. Lovingly guided through at least 3, possibly more mutations. Sculpted and trained for high office, even the council itself.
Who are you?
I asked.
I am the Master Builder. You've met me before, Manipular.
He still insisted on calling me that. It was meant as an insult. I did vaguely recall someone like him in my early youth, visiting my family's world in the Orion complex. He had not then been called Master Builder. He had been known simply as Faber. Where the Didact had been bulked and hewn, the Master Builder had been gently carved, rounded, polished to a rosy gray sheen. His skin radiated musky perfume. I thought of the Sanshum and their ability to charm. My head was full of interesting thoughts, none of them focused, none involved with my situation, my predicament, my survival. We were arranged along one side of a long, dimly lighted corridor, broader than it was high, broken by angular blocks stepped up against the walls. Every few seconds, upright bars of light swept down the middle, function unknown to me. My ancilla was still suppressed. The Master Builder walked around me.
When did you join the Didact in his mission?
On Erde Tyrene.
Erde Tyrene is assigned to the life workers as a nature preserve under protection of the librarian. Were humans involved in this plot from the beginning?
I don't know what you mean.
Were they aware of the consequences of liberating the Didact from his warrior keep?
I don't think so.
It's our best theory to date that all of you were guided by the librarian in an effort to frustrate the council. Do you personally disagree with the council?
I don't know.
How can you be so uninformed?
By not paying attention, I said. I lived among miners before slipping away to Erde Tyrene. They have little interest in builders and their affairs.
True, the Master Builder said. Your family expresses support for you, but extreme disappointment and surprise at your actions. For the time being, your father has entrusted me personally with your welfare.
That did not sound good. I doubted they would have lightly given me up to the Master Builder. Builders in general have strong family bonds, which of course my family was accustomed to having me test.
He claims he did not know you were on Erde Tyrene. You were sent to Edom. Did you inform him of your destination?
Worse and worse. The slightest misstep or misstatement on my part could put my whole family in jeopardy. That much was clear.
I'm reluctant to tell you things that might be an error. My thoughts are still jumbled, and my memory after the mutation is also suspect. I'd like to help, Master Builder.
And you will, in time. Meanwhile, enjoy another brief rest. We still have work to do here, and after that is finished, we'll attend to you. Now, where are those humans?
He raised his arm and my armor locked. The suppressor field returned, this time set so high that I automatically started to black out. Just before oblivion struck, again, I felt a brush with the domain. They are about to give it powers it never had before.
Just as they did ages ago,
those who are ignorant of history are doomed to repeat it. I thought I recognized whomever or whatever had deposited this message, but could not place the memory. It was not the Didact, that was certain. It might not even have been a forerunner. Chapter 26. Now came the brightest light I had ever seen. I was awake again, looking down from a transparent platform, perhaps the flagship of the Master Builder, upon the wreckage of a city. The light came from an horrific plasma ball rising on the horizon, shooting forth subsidiary streams of matter-pattern interference, mass-converting into both electromagnetic radiation and vacuum energy. Shields darkened, but not before I felt another tingle and was temporarily blinded. My armor would have a real job to do after all this, to repair the radiation damage. In that shadowy pause, the Didact's memory showed me what Asanshum City would have looked like before this destruction. Sweeping, branching organic towers and broad curved lanes, thousands of streets arranged like ripples crossing a pond. The Sanshum, true to form, had used all the means at their disposal to regain a comfortable existence, with light commerce and travel between two adjacent worlds and several small moons, the beginnings, in better times and under other circumstances, of a full historical recovery. Another dawn seemed to arrive as my eyes recovered. Our ship came down on a broad open plain, surrounded by tall ships and plumes of smoke, and guarded by a grim-visaged contingent of builders in battle armor. Builder security. That still seemed strange to me. Three confinement bubbles appeared beside me, hanging by tow threads from grapplers. One contained Riser, eyes closed, head upturned in his armor. The other, Shakas, whose face showed some returning awareness. And the third contained the Didact, naked and fully aware, surrounded by pain projectors, stripped of armor, honor, dignity, and doing all he could not to show his agony. He glanced at me, and in his eyes was a question, one I could not yet answer. More pain was applied, and he jerked his head forward again, looking only at the Master Builder.
"You've been a lot of trouble, Promethean, and now you've dragged down your wife and these poor underlings."
This, I believe, was the point at which my maturity arrived, in an awful rush. The Master Builder, whether he knew it or not, now had a fierce enemy. Me.
"You came here to meet with the Sanshum, did you not?"
the Master Builder asked.
"Well, let us arrange for that meeting. The librarian recently rescued a few, and that seems to have ignited the uprising, whose final issue is being decided even now. She is beyond my reach, unfortunately. But you are not. And these are not."
A line of Sanshum prisoners, also wrapped in constraining bubbles, was dragged forward like a string of beads over the field, until all were arranged in the looming shadow of the Master Builder's ship. None bore evidence of the legendary, sensuous beauty of the Sanshum. I looked over an assortment of decrepit-looking elders, not alert warriors or energetic youth. Several had arrived in the odd, wheeled chairs the Confirmer had mentioned, their heads and shoulders burdened by broad ornamental helmets with widespread wings. Others, more fit, sparked the Didact's buried memories of handsome figures from times past, when the Sanshum had first and foremost demanded sensuous fulfillment in their lives. I seemed to see them as if in a long, ornate procession, patterns, shadows, and echoes of past figures trailing back for thousands of years.
"The Master Builder is well known,"
the lead elder said in a huffing, lungless sort of voice.
"I am called by my fellows Sustaining Wind. How may we assist you, Triumphant One?"
The Master Builder ordered Shakas and Riser forward, out of the shadow of the lift exit. The humans in their paralyzed armor seemed only half aware of their situation. I wondered if the Master Builder had surrounded them with pain projectors as well. The Sanshum delegation reacted with surprise and even anger. One of the prophets ordered his chair wheeled forward and surveyed Shakas with a profoundly sad expression, They are debased, the prophet announced to those gathering and roiling behind him. This is the fate that awaited us. It was foretold by past prophets and demonstrated by the sorrow of the librarian. Was it the presence of these wretches that brought this devastation upon us? Let's not forget the secret construction and stockpiling of ships and attacks upon our visiting fleet, the master builder said. Sustaining Wind lowered his head, the wide headdress vibrating. Shakus and Ryza remained still and silent, but Shakus turned his eye on me and winked. I had no idea what this meant, but it cheered me. He apparently did not regard me as his enemy, and for that I felt a sad gratitude. Is this then some attempt to remind us of our shame in our time of final destruction? The elder continued. Shakus looked now to the skies. Perhaps he was thinking of past moments when humans, San Shum, and Forerunners had gathered, in other, even more violent times. The elder now rolled his way around Ryzer. Ryzer looked down upon him, small furred face, more than a meter higher than the elder's wrinkled visage, minus, of course, that ridiculous crown. And why do you give them Forerunner armor? The elder squeaked and puffed. Are these vanquished ones now elevated to higher status than those with whom you signed treaties? Did you enlist them in this attack? The humans are servants of the librarian. The master builder ordered several builder security guards between the humans and the San Shum. They firmly but gently pushed back the elder. Then the master builder turned to the didact and asked, What memories quicken in you at this pitiful sight? The didact did not answer. Are there other clues to be found here about that which we have lost? Yes, that was it in part. The didact had come here to... The elder's chair pulled back. The librarian selected a few from among us, and then she left. Her visit told us that whatever we did, destruction would soon be upon us. We reacted as any civilized species must to preserve our heritage and our children. What have you brought upon us? The elder wheezed, his face livid. You gave us your word of honor. He thought you concealed a great secret, the master builder said. You know why we are here? We are not savages. We have observed, listened. Your people are on the verge of desperation, even panic. The front has advanced. The front we pushed back beyond the galaxy 10,000 years ago. The enemy we vanquished that you cannot. I was still trying to fully recover what I knew lay within me, the didact's history of the Flood. I sensed only a roiling tide of chaos. The elder raised scrawny, feeble hands as if in exultation. He turned to face the master builder. And now, you have lost something, haven't you? Something so tremendous and important that surely it cannot be hidden. The master builder finally seemed to show the elder some sympathy. It has been said humans and San Shum found the secret of destroying their greatest enemies. You were preserved, should we ever need that secret. The Master Builder brought doom upon us, and upon yourselves. No secrets, no future. As for your doom, that I believe, the Master Builder said. I see there never was a secret, and no reason to preserve. You have violated our treaty. Forerunners never tolerate betrayal of trust. But while it's clear to me that you have nothing to offer, I have to ask you about the Didact's secret, the one he conspired to hide.
With your help.
Another string of bubbles arrived, occupied by a very different group of San Xiong. Bloody, missing limbs, barely aware of their surroundings. Beyond their injuries and tattered raiment, these were well-shaped, sleek, muscular creatures, more properly suiting the San Xiong's traditional image. The bubbles opened, and the Master Builder's warriors organized the captives in a line before us, before the elders. Even in pain and under constraint, the way they moved conveyed both power and charm, subdued by circumstance, but real nonetheless. The chair-bound elder almost spat upon the newcomers.
These are vipers in our beds, the personal agents of this defeat. I will not share breath with them.
Shakus tried to laugh. He merely ended up choking. Riser watched it all with lips drawn tight, brows high, eyes flashing as if in warning. I had never seen him in a rage. His size did not diminish him now. The Master Builder walked along the line, surveying with amusing air both varieties of San Xiong, as different as night and day, old and new, age and youth. But here I knew the more desiccated and decrepit figures were the true revolutionaries. The Master Builder doubled back and stopped before the Didact.
Promethean, hear me, he said.
You have one last chance to redeem yourself. I have had this planet searched high and low by my special intelligence forces. All who might confirm what you claim exists are assembled here, preserved even in their treason. Their families are dead, their resistance completely crushed. Surely now they will reveal what they have concealed for so long. Or so you've claimed, all these thousands of years. The Didact looked wearily among them.
You've picked and preserved in error.
The Master Builder's cold fury built until I thought he would raise his arm yet again and call for pain projectors to surround us all. Then he pulled back his anger. Looking upon his face, I wondered what resources he had acquired upon his rise from manipular to first form, or second or third. He did not seem wiser for all that, only more powerful, more cruel. By comparison, the Didact was the gentler forerunner, a complete contradiction to my former understanding.
No questions for them, the Master Builder asked.
There was a San Xiong whom I knew and worked with after your defeat,
the Didact said, his eyes slowly sweeping the line, the elders.
He too entered a state of exile to atone for the defeat he faced against my forces. Before then, we established a kind of bond, such as there might be between those who lost and took away so many brave fellows and family. He it was who told me that when the time comes, when the enemies of all return, he would reveal his secret, in exchange for the freedom of his descendants. I do not see him here.
You speak of our first prophet, the elder said, his bluster vanishing.
Where is this dirt beast?
The Master Builder asked, using the most obscene slur upon all who are not of our species.
I saw his palace destroyed in the first assault, the elder said, his voice rough and sad. He is no more.
The Master Builder raised his blunt jaw, moved his hand, and his soldiers positioned themselves behind the line of injured San Xiong prisoners. Then he turned to the Didact.
You can save these warriors if you tell us what happened on Sharm HaKor, and how that ties in with this prophet and his secret. A prison holds a prisoner. But someone here
holds the key.
I saw something in the Master Builder's look that froze my blood. All his polish and preparation, all his elegant mutations, could not conceal an awareness that his power was rapidly waning. All he did here was in desperation. Whatever had been lost, whatever had gone missing, was not something Forerunners could afford to misplace. And it was not just the prisoner of Chaurmhakor. I remembered the ring-shaped void and streaming trace left in the magnetic field and solar wind of the Chaurmhakor system. Was it the same as the ring in the Sanshum system? Did the Master Builder have more than one at his disposal, each one capable of destroying almost all life in a solar system? You brought your halo to Chaurmhakor, I said. Is that what you've lost?
Enough,
the didact commanded, and I instantly shut up, shut down my emotions, stiffened my posture. For he was correct. This was not for others to hear. Not even I should know. The Master Builder looked upon me in horror, his polish and dignity erased. He approached me sidewise, as if I were a serpent that might strike out and cause even more pain.
If no one can tell me where this prisoner might have gone, or indeed who or what it was, then we are done here. This world is done. This line of history is about to end.
The Master Builder leaned his head close to mine.
You were at Chaurmhakor, he said, in a low voice, silky but disturbing. If not for your family's power, I would strip you down to a haze of burning brain cells and spread you out upon this field. What could I pick out from those naive cinders, Manipular? You are just a pitiful echo of the didact. What you know, he knows, and much more. And he is mine, to do with as I please.
The guards restored the bubbles around the Sanshum prisoners, this time including the elders in their peculiar chairs. They then approached the didact and locked him down in a suppressor. The humans were next. When they came to me, the Master Builder held them off for a moment, long enough to tell me,
"We have notified your family. Through long relationship, I subdue my anger. Your father has asserted his authority. You will be exchanged, but your family will be fined, ruinously fined. Your wandering days are over, born stellar makes eternal."
My father's authority? Where are you taking the didact?
Where he will be most useful to me.
And the humans?
The librarian has overstepped more than usual this time. All her projects will be terminated.
The soldiers turned their suppressors upon me. The last thing I saw was the didact's face, contorted in agony, but his eyes locked firmly on my own. I knew. He knew. Between us, there was more than echo and response. My world shrank into a tight, gray knot.
Chapter 27. I was to be returned to where my life began, within the wide orbital waltz of three suns and the great nebular complex of Orion, returned to home and family, where I hoped I would be allowed to recuperate, meditate, and achieve my own maturity, in my own way, and in my own time. While I was still unconscious, Builder Security escorted me out of the quarantine sphere to an adjacent system. I was finally allowed to come awake, and found myself on a stripped-down personnel transport and research vessel, shared by both miners and builders. My journey thereafter was swift, quiet, mostly uneventful. I was not treated differently from other passengers, mostly stellar engineers. They seemed to think I was a warrior servant recruited by the builders and recovering from some unexplained trauma. There were apparently many such being ferried to recovery centers. I did not tell them otherwise. Others continued to regard me as something of a freak. I could not disagree. I did not enjoy looking at myself in a mirror. I had certainly grown. My physical strength was much greater. In nearly every respect, I suppose, I actually am a freak. That my fellow passengers paid any attention to me spoke well of the kindly culture of these scientific adventurers, out to develop and increase the Forerunner realm without military conquest. Our ship stopped at several installations where the science of planetary formation was being taken to advanced stages. Rocky worlds were at a premium, one of the miners explained to me in the ship's small, sparsely appointed lounge. Forerunners now had the ability to collapse an asteroid field into a molten mass of the 20-megameter range, then cool and cure the protoplanet in less than 10,000 years. "The last problem remains taming young stars," he said. "But we're working on that. We send in stellar-class engineers equipped with third-class ancillas, plasma jockeys, we call them. They love the heat, but most vanish after a few hundred years. Just go away. We don't know what becomes of them. They get the job done, though." I listened politely enough, but my own misery left little in the way of curiosity. As my armor did not have an ancilla, on occasion I slept, and my dreams were extraordinary, covering thousands of lives and millions of years, cut up and rearranged in a dense tapestry of world lines. But I forgot them almost immediately upon waking. On our way through the outer reaches of the Orion Nebular Complex, popping in and out of slipspace to deliver our supplies and researchers to various stellar nurseries, we actually came within a million kilometers of the natal planet of the Forerunners, a now desolate and radiation-scoured cinder of a world known in the most ancient tongue as Gibalb. Gibalb had once been a paradise. Emerging into the galactic realm, these early Forerunners had been content to live and develop in a glorious cradle of just 12 stars. But their first experiments in stellar engineering had gone awry, causing an infectious series of novas that brightened the entire Orion complex for 50,000 years and nearly destroyed our species. Images from that time show the nebulae to have been extraordinarily brilliant and colorful. Forerunners had long since improved upon their craft and made fewer mistakes. Now the complex was darker and much less active, barely visible from a distance of more than 100 light years. While the others were buried deep in interactions with their ancillas, I observed our journey with only eye, mind, and memory. The only interruption was a navigational glitch caused by disturbances in slipspace itself. When we were informed that our ship was 5 light years off course, one researcher surmised that the great portals were being overutilized of late. "We've been told over and over we can't deliver raw materials to needy systems. The only thing that could cause this sort of trouble is frequent passage of exceptionally large vessels, abusively frequent and unimaginably large. And who do you think authorizes that?" He swept all his fellow passengers with a meaningful look, as if we might be compelled to divulge something of our knowledge about these matters. The others, those who emerged from their ancillary studies, one and all derided his theory. I said nothing. I had witnessed one such passage, and evidence of another. But it was certainly not my place to speak about what I had seen. Still, this glitch caused an unexpected and uncontrolled detour that provoked a surprise inspection from a team of exalted builders. They arrived on a warship of unfamiliar design, sleek and fast, intercepting us near a once-deserted association of extrasolar planets. The rumor quickly spread among the researchers that we had approached a secure installation about which none of them knew anything. The boarding party consisted of builder security, none of them warrior servants, contrary to long tradition. They observed all the proper courtesies, then thoroughly scoured the transport's records. After that, they politely asked us to strip our armor. I, of course, wore none, and debriefed the researchers' ancillas, in search of what, none would say. The team soon departed, having concluded our breach was accidental, but leaving us none the wiser. Before they left, one shot me a look that combined contempt and pity. I was the only one they had ignored. This naturally brought suspicion upon me. Rumors also spread that I was the true cause of the delay, and only the bravest and lowest of the researchers would speak to me thereafter. Soon even they closed me out. The rest of my journey was solitary, until 12 light-years from home I was transferred to a swift yacht shared by my family and 5 other builder clans. My father, mother, and sister greeted me as I crossed from the transport to the yacht. I had not seen any of them for 3 years. My father had undergone another mutation since I left, and now bore a distinct and disturbing resemblance to the Master Builder. My mother had changed very little. If anything, she had only become more sedate and dignified, beginning her 3rd millennial interim, during which she would neither give birth nor otherwise create offspring. Whereas my father was 4 meters tall, broad-shouldered and thick-legged, his skin like polished onyx, his well-trimmed patches of hair purplish-white, his eyes black, flecked with silver. My mother was just over 2 meters tall, slender as a reed, her hair deep red and skin silver-gray. My sister was slightly taller than our mother and less slender, in that transition stage prior to family interchange, courtship, and marriage. Even before my exile to Edom, she had been undergoing gentle mutation to reproductive maturity, and was now through the earliest phase of her advance to first form. She greeted me with silent, wide-eyed appraisal, then clasped me swiftly and warmly. My mother, seeing my condition, greeted me with painful formality. My father, with a firm clasp of my shoulder, hid his emotions and exchanged only a few precisely chosen words, welcoming me back to the fold. My parents were over 6,000 years old. My sister and I were barely 12.
"I'm sure there will be much to discuss," he concluded, before sending me to my quarters to try on a fresh suit of armor. "We will dine in an hour."
In the small, elegantly appointed cabin, the new armor was expertly spun about me. The ship assembled a perfectly dignified and unremarkable Ancilla from its own reserves. Neuter and simple, it seemed a shallow parody of the one supplied by the librarian. Not very helpful and completely unexciting. "Apologies for this primitive accessory," the ship said, noting my reaction. "Your Ancilla may of course be upgraded once you arrive at your estate." I felt a deep pang of loneliness and an odd sensation of grief. The Ancilla did not know how to cheer me or what words of support to offer. I felt responsible for all that had happened and was still happening, great events known and unknown far away, plus the fates of 1 Promethean and 2 human beings. That first shipboard dinner was awkward, quiet, unenlightening. The ship tried to serve what it thought were my favorite foods. In my present condition, they made me feel vaguely ill.
"Perhaps he requires a diet more suited to a warrior,"
my father suggested. Subduing a flash of anger, I did not ask him what he might be involved in. Professionally, that 20,000 light-years away, I should be treated with grim leniency by an otherwise all-powerful Master Builder. I had advanced, all right, well beyond being an embarrassment to being a major disaster, both behavior-wise and in physical appearance. In a few days, we were home again. Chapter 28. The first sight of our family's world roused a mixed palette of high emotions. We watched the orbital approach from the yacht's bridge deck, a comfortable, largely ceremonial appurtenance. The yacht was controlled by its own Ancilla, like nearly all Forerunner ships, but a parody of old times still required upon landing the presence of the senior family member, in this case my father, who barked out commands in Forerunner Yagon, a language older by far than my parents, but not nearly as old as the Digon the Didact had learned as a young warrior.
Didact. They called me that when I taught at the College of Strategic Defense of the Mantle, the War College. Some of my students seemed to think I was overly demanding and too precise in my definitions.
This upwelling came as no surprise. I had expected something like it. The Didact had sponsored my mutation, after all, and that meant I contained some of his inherent patterns, and possibly even much of his memory. I felt as if something was growing inside me I might not be able to control. I tried not to show outward sign, but my father easily detected the change. Of course, our family's homeworld had changed little. What need for change when every square meter of its surface had been built upon, tuned, and adapted to Forerunner comfort and ambition? Even from 1,000 kilometers, the arc of the planet's limb was visibly ruffled with architecture, though certainly not the equal of the ruins found on any great precursor planet. No vaulting orbital bridges stretching from world to world. No unbending and eternal cables. I flashed back to Chonam Hakor before its mysterious destruction, seeing as if miraculously restored both the precursor ruins and the use that humans had once made of them. But enough. Returning to my family's world again reminded me that builders had nothing to be ashamed of in their quest for architectural dominance. I had once taken a youthful fancy to our elevated oceans, each 1,000 kilometers in diameter and 1,000 meters deep, shining like a belt of overlapping coins around the equator. Each was separated from its neighbor by several hundred meters of elevation. They're overlapping, depending on whether cascades of water or twisting waterspout funnels joined them. Life workers, by invitation, had for many centuries come to study these great aquariums and experiment with new varieties of exotic creatures, which they sometimes exported to other research groups and hobbyists across the galaxy. Once, I had helped tutor one such experiment, a pod of saltwater reptilians, tri-torsoed carnivores with 3 linked brains and amazing senses, the most intelligent of their kind. Until my mother decided, after several nearly successful attempts on my young life, that these creatures were entirely too dangerous. She terminated the experiment, and the life worker who designed the reptilians was reassigned to another world, far away. Almost as impressive were the arched rockways of the Northern Hemisphere, stretching in a longitudinal belt from the oceans to the perfect circle of the icy pole. Great red and yellow